This is Louisiana Considered on WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge. I'm Diane Mack. Just ahead on today's show, we'll visit with a socially conscious artist whose work might make you think differently about some contemporary issues. And this month is National Breastfeeding Month. You'll hear about a program called The Gift that's helping new moms decide how they will feed their babies. But first, on Friday, the Louisiana Supreme Court upheld the state's near-total abortion ban. This comes after months of abortion access legislation being knocked around in district courts. Now, Louisiana's last three abortion clinics are set to relocate, leaving the state without a clinic for the first time since 1974. WWNO's reproductive health care reporter Rosemary Westwood joins us for more. Hi, Rosemary.
Happy to be here.
First off, tell us about these clinics. Where are they currently and where are they headed?
So the state currently has three abortion clinics. There's one in Shreveport, one in Baton Rouge, and one in New Orleans. And all three told me this week, as you said, they are leaving the state, but none would tell me where exactly they're going. We know that they're going to go to states where abortion remains legal. You know, Florida is often thought of as the closest one, although it has many restrictions. There are other states that they could look to relocate to. A Mississippi abortion clinic that closed ended up in New Mexico. So we know that this is, you know, what other clinics in states that have banned abortion are doing. And in that case, it's not surprising, but it is, you know, a big moment in terms of abortion access, because as you said, Louisiana has had clinics and many more than three over the years since 1974.
Now, these clinics have been fighting to stay open for so long. What was the final straw that encouraged them all to relocate?
It was a ruling last Friday by the Louisiana Supreme Court. So Hope Medical Group for Women, which is the Shreveport abortion clinic, is one of the plaintiffs in a challenge to the state's trigger ban, which took effect when Roe versus Wade was overturned. And that case had seen the law blocked and then reinstated multiple times until August 1st, when an appeals court essentially ordered the law to take effect. And the clinic then asked the Louisiana Supreme Court to step in and overrule the appeals court decision. But the Louisiana Supreme Court rejected that request. And that really for the clinics felt like the end of the line. So instead of closing for good, these clinics have said they want to keep fighting for abortion access and they're going to do it in other states.
Well, now that the clinics will be in other states, will they still try to help patients in Louisiana?
That is exactly what they want to do. And what that means is, I think, trying to find locations that are relatively close to Louisiana. These clinics, you know, have been providing care for Louisianans for a long time, many of them, decades. The Hope Medical Group for Women Clinic in Shreveport has been open since 1980. And so they see relocating actually as a way to continue to try to provide care for Louisianans who can travel. And the clinics already are connected with abortion funds, which can help people pay for travel and pay for the costs of abortions. And they'll, I think, continue to have those relationships so that they can be a resource for those who can get out of state.
And what is the situation facing people who can't travel out of state for an abortion?
For most people who need an abortion, they won't get one. This law has no exceptions for rape and incest. So people, even in those situations who can't leave Louisiana, will be forced to give birth. And that includes children. The law does have very narrow exceptions for a patient's life being at stake or if a fetus is bound to die. But that doesn't mean that hospitals will actually provide this kind of care to patients. Because even if they provide an abortion they think is legal, a prosecutor could still disagree with them and they could be investigated and charged. And so rather than face that, doctors have told me they think women will be denied care or it will be delayed and that women's health will suffer.
Rosemary Westwood covers reproductive health for WWNO. Rosemary, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
New materials artist Matt Kenyon has shown his work all over the world. The Baton Rouge native has pieces in the permanent collection at the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and he was named a TED Fellow in 2015. Now, for the first time, Kenyon's socially conscious works are on view in his hometown. His latest exhibition is his largest to date. It's called Cloudburst, the work of Matt Kenyon, and is on view at Baton Rouge Gallery, Center for Contemporary Art. Matt Kenyon joins us now. Matt, welcome to Louisiana Considered.
Hi, Diane. It's great to join you today.
You live and work in New York. You're an associate professor in the Department of Art at the University of Buffalo. Tell me, what does it feel like to finally be able to bring your work to the capital city, your hometown, Baton Rouge?
Well, it feels really great. I was able to reconnect with so many members of the community that were inspirations and very influential on me when I was a young art student over 20-something years ago, just starting out in Baton Rouge.
And what was the inspiration for this exhibit?
Well, Baton Rouge Gallery reached out to me around 2018, and they wondered if I might be interested in having an exhibition. And it really seemed like an eerie coincidence, because in my studio at that very same time, I was working on a project called Tide, which takes its inspiration from the 2016 flood that affected so many members of the community of Baton Rouge, including much of my family that still lives there.
How were they affected by the flood?
My brother Doug carried his month-and-a-half-old son above his head with water up to his elbows. My parents had to be evacuated by one of these giant military vehicles from their home. And then, of course, like so many, they had to rebuild their homes afterwards. Some of them lost their homes. Some of them had to rip down the walls and rebuild them. And many of them are still dealing with the outcomes of that, either financial or in terms of their own personal health.
And you just happened to be working on a project when you got that call.
Yeah, I was really struck by how quickly the media attention moves on after a disaster, and how many of my friends and family felt that after initially being seen, they felt sort of invisible after the sort of media lens went on to the next disaster. And so I set about creating tiny little portraits of houses that would fit inside of champagne glasses. And I made the houses out of a material that when they're submerged in water, they become completely invisible. And then the structure of the glasses is this gigantic champagne glass pyramid that looks at the fragility of a social system, the stratification of wealth and privilege, and exploring how maybe, of course, we know trickle-down economics doesn't work, but what does trickle down are the negative outcomes from climate change and various housing and underhousing related social conditions.
Tell us more about this new material that you are working with that makes the homes disappear inside of the champagne glass.
Well, like with much of my work, I sort of start with an idea, a kind of effect that I want to create in the gallery or in the world. And then I start doing research. And that's one great thing about being at a university, like the University at Buffalo, where I'm also the graduate director, is that I have the opportunity to work with really brilliant material scientists and talk with my colleagues. And so I discovered that there is a special polymer material that's used in the solar industry to protect solar cells from the wind and the rain. And I was able to kind of create a cocktail of this polymer that had the exact same refractive index as the fluid, and then just set about a kind of labor-intensive task of designing and manufacturing thousands of tiny little homes, all pulled from either photographs, video, or first-person experience of looking at these homes.
So these are not sealed or glued? They're individual glasses that anyone could knock down?
Yes. And I tried to talk with the gallery about that, how the metaphors within the work, you know, tie directly to the metaphors within our society. You know, hopefully during COVID, we realized that the people who are most responsible for the proper running and functioning of our society are the people that often get overlooked or left behind, the caregivers, the people who stock our grocery shelves, the people who, you know, really run the world. And so many of those, unfortunately, those members of our community, you know, are living in a very precarious state, you know, either underhoused, limited access to health care, and definitely undercompensated.
And as with the houses and the champagne glasses, they too become invisible?
Yeah. In the end, you'll just be able to look through it, maybe see the tiny roof lines of houses. And, you know, I'm really hoping that that particular piece is a centerpiece for conversations within the community to think about how we got to where we are right now and what we can learn from and how we can move forward.
How many works in this show, Matt?
There are about 13 works, ranging from the very earliest of my projects. My studio is called SWAP. It stands for Studies of Work Atmospheres in Mass Production. It was started there in Baton Rouge in 1999, and I have several projects that are being debuted in the exhibition as well. So I've never shown them anywhere before, and I'm happy to share them with the community of Baton Rouge.
Now, if you would, Matt, take us through the show and describe some of the other works that we'll see.
So the oldest pieces in the show are actually three paintings that I made as a 19-year-old painting and printmaker at Southeastern Louisiana University, where I went to school. And those are a series of works from a group of paintings I made called Route and Rut, and they're oil paintings that barely survived the flood. So when you see them, you'll see scratches and watermarks on the paintings themselves. There's a project called Lock Set, which looks like a set of three keys installed on the wall of the gallery. And when you look closer at the keys, you'll see that the negative space of the key is actually a portrait of individual homeowners from the community in Buffalo where I live. And during the pandemic, I learned to be a bit of a locksmith, and I've been working with members of the community who are precarious in terms of housing to rekey parts of their home so that it contains their portrait inside the negative space of the lock. So in the event that they were to be displaced from their home, there'd be some aspect of their identity encoded within the security infrastructure of the building. And there's a project called Supermajor, which looks at America's dependence on oil and gas. And that one is one that really has to be seen to believe, because when you approach it, it looks like a rack of oil cans in the gallery. And one of the center cans has a hole in it. But instead of oil leaking out, the oil seems to be flowing in reverse in slow motion, drop by drop, endlessly flowing from the pedestal into the can.
Wow.
So I tell people that's a little illusion to point out a larger illusion that these oil and gas companies are constantly pushing over on us, that we have to live in a world that's built on the dependency of extraction.
Very interesting.
Thank you.
You touched upon a lot of subjects, climate change, housing insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
You also address gun violence?
Yes, there's a project in the exhibition called Alternative Rule, and that project looks like a tablet of alternate rule paper, the kind of paper we all learned to do our cursive lettering on as children, with the red and blue and dashed line in the middle. But all of the lines are actually microprinted text, and they contain the details of individual United States school children who've been killed or injured in gun violence, from Columbine to as close to the present as I could get. And I give that paper out freely in the gallery. You can take a video magnifier and read the names and give them presents. And you can take a sheet of the paper and write a member of government in the gallery using the paper as stationery. So I think of it as a kind of platform that the viewers and the participants can inscribe their own voice onto and hopefully break this sort of deadlock that we have in the United States, where we're incapable of thinking about some alternative situation in terms of our relationship to firearms and the security of our children.
Very interesting work that you're doing there. How are you hoping that this will inspire viewers to further explore the issues that you present in Cloudburst? What is the change you hope to see?
What I like about art and what I hope to do with my work is take something that's familiar, whether it's a key in your pocket pad of paper or the dripping of rain out your window and show it to you in a strange way, a way that's unfamiliar, that makes you see it again with like fresh eyes. And maybe if enough people do that, the experience of that will help generate some positive collective action to really deal with these problems.
New Materials artist and TED Fellow, Matt Kenyon. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Diane.
Matt Kenyon's Cloudburst is on view at Baton Rouge Gallery, Center for Contemporary Art, through August 31st. More info is online at batonrougegallery.org. You're listening to Louisiana Considered on WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge. I'm Diane Mack. August is National Breastfeeding Month. Louisiana has one of the lowest breastfeeding rates in the country, and state officials are working with hospitals to encourage and instruct more mothers to breastfeed. A program of the State Health Department that is leading the way is called The Gift. And joining us now is Dr. Veronica Gillespie Bell, Medical Director of the Louisiana Perinatal Quality Collaborative, a network of public health providers working to improve outcomes for birthing mothers, families, and newborns. Welcome to Louisiana Considered.
Thank you so much.
This program, The Gift, is now in its third iteration, The Gift 3.0. What is its focus?
So The Gift, in general, is focused on partnering with our birthing facilities to make sure they're implementing best practices that can improve breastfeeding initiation and exclusivity rates.
And why is it called The Gift?
When we are able to partner with our moms and have them to initiate breastfeeding, it truly is a gift. It's a gift of bonding between the mother and the infant. It is a gift of the mother sharing her antibodies to protect that baby from different diseases. It is the gift of that mother creating lifelong health for that infant when they are able to start out with breastfeeding for their nutrition.
Now, did the recent shortage of baby formula put a renewed spotlight on breastfeeding?
I will say, as a practicing obstetrician and gynecologist, absolutely. Our patients were concerned during the shortage about how they were going to feed their infants, and it really gave us the impetus to double down on breastfeeding and being able to discuss those practices with our patients in the clinic, because it really does start with education that happens in the prenatal time period that gets those moms and those birthing families ready to breastfeed. In addition to the things that I mentioned, we live in a state where we have evacuations. It is hurricane season right now. And so it is not guaranteed that formula is going to be accessible because of needing to evacuate or not having clean water to help make formula, or who knew we would have a formula shortage. And so we, in my opinion, as a country, really, if we had been supporting breastfeeding and putting an emphasis on breastfeeding in the way that we should, then we would have never come to a formula shortage, because formula would be the alternative and not the first choice.
Now, when it comes to breastfeeding rates, how does Louisiana compare with other states?
So the breastfeeding rates in Louisiana are about 66%, and nationally they're at 84%. Unfortunately, we are lower than the average in the United States. We do know that in our GIF-designated birthing facilities, our rates are higher, so we do know that the GIF is working. However, we do see, even in those facilities where the breastfeeding rates have increased because of the GIF and because of the things that we do through the GIF program, we still see a disparity in those rates between Black mothers and white mothers.
Tell us more about that disparity, and how are you working to close the gap?
you know, with the disparities, and this is something I think from a national perspective, there's been a lot of highlights to and information on, but there are definitely disparities in the rates that we see amongst our Black women. Their rates are much lower than our white mothers that are breastfeeding. And there's a lot of reasons why we see that. There is a historical perspective that goes along with that. But then there also is implicit bias that we have as practitioners and clinicians in the hospital towards how we counsel our Black mothers about breastfeeding. And what we are doing through the GIFT, and really that is the 3.0 part of the GIFT, is we are really putting forth more efforts to make sure we are addressing the biases and those different things that we see that cause those disparities in the breastfeeding rate.
So what exactly does that mean?
So we look at any disparity that we see, no matter what the outcome is. We know implicit bias, and we know structural racism is going to be at the root of those disparities. And if we think about it from a historical perspective, we know, thinking back to slave periods, Black mothers were not allowed to breastfeed their own infants. They were made to be wet nurses and feed the infants of slave owners. And that bias that Black mothers do not want to breastfeed has perpetuated throughout time and throughout history. And so it has created this bias that Black mothers don't want to breastfeed their infants, which is not the case and not true, but that is our own implicit bias, an unconscious bias. And so because of that, we tend to not counsel mothers in the same way. We tend to give up sooner for our Black mothers that are having trouble with breastfeeding and not really addressing the barriers in the same way. And this is why we see, again, differences in how we deliver care to Black mothers, and this is why we see those disparities.
What is the recommended amount of time for mothers to breastfeed?
I'm glad that you asked that question. The American Academy of Pediatrics just released new recommendations within the last week and a half. Initially, they recommended breastfeeding up to 1 year, but now they are recommending even up to 2 years if that is something that mother and the infant can do.
And what are the benefits to the child and to the mother?
For the mom, it helps with weight loss after pregnancy. And I know that may sound vain, but being able to lose that weight that you gained during the pregnancy helps with your lifetime risk of decreasing obesity and decreasing diabetes. We know that for mothers that breastfeed, there is a decreased risk of postpartum depression as well. We know that for infants that are breastfed, there is a decreased risk of sudden infant death syndrome. We know there's a decreased risk of respiratory tract infections, of gastrointestinal infections, of allergies, of asthma, of eczema. And then later in life, there's a decreased risk of type 1, type 2 diabetes, of childhood obesity. And again, as I mentioned earlier, when mothers breastfeed, they are able to pass their antibodies to their baby and to their infant to protect the infant from different illnesses as well.
Now, who is eligible to participate in this program?
Any mother delivering at any hospital that's GIFT designated is eligible to participate. So 42 of the 48 birthing facilities in Louisiana have the GIFT designation. And so it's likely that for any mom that's delivering, they will be at a GIFT designated facility.
And how can birthing moms connect with this program?
The GIFT website is thegiftla.org.
Thegiftla.org. Mm-hmm. Dr. Veronica Gillespie Bell, Medical Director of the Louisiana Perinatal Quality Collaborative. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
This has been Louisiana Considered. I'm Diane Mack. Thanks to our guest, new media artist and TED Fellow, Matt Kenyon. Dr. Veronica Gillespie Bell, Medical Director of the Louisiana Perinatal Quality Collaborative, and WWNO's Reproductive Healthcare Reporter, Rosemary Westwood. Our managing producer is Alana Shriver, and our digital editor is Caitlin Umholtz. Our engineers are Garrett Pittman, Aubrey Procell, and Thomas Walsh. You can listen to Louisiana Considered Monday through Friday at noon and 7:30 p.m. It's available on Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you get your podcast.
Major support for Louisiana Considered provided by Rouse's Markets, a Louisiana shopping experience, with additional support from Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation.